Hello! Hello, everybody! Welcome to the Lunarverse. I'm Dr. Charles Liu, your host, and as long as there is a sun in the sky, please call me Chuck. Now, of course, you can call me Chuck at night, too, even when the sun is in the sky, down on the other side of the Earth. And I don't know why I'm making a big deal about this, except that today's episode is precisely about the sun and where it is in relationship to other things in our solar system. But first, let me introduce, as always, our co-host, Alan Liu. Hey, Alan.
Hello.
Today is a special episode indeed, and I wanted to ask you if you've checked out any umbras of late.
Let's see. So umbras, the big one we're talking about is the solar eclipse. We're talking about umbra of the moon, the darkest part of that shadow there. But every object that's illuminated has an umbra. You know, if you have a shadow on the ground, it's got one. If you got, say, a moon of Jupiter might have one as well, something like that. That'd be pretty cool.
Right. And we should all sort of keep that in mind as we have all this hype about this total solar eclipse coming up, that really, even though it is a cool cosmic thing, right? Indeed, definitely, it is also a very common thing, a very terrestrial, very everyday thing.
Yeah.
Umbras and penumbras and stuff of
right.
Shadows. And
the cool part with the moon is just because it's so large and so far away, it creates all these different visual effects you don't get for just like hiding behind a rock.
That's right. So I'm sure you all can guess what today's joyfully cool cosmic thing is.
Woo-hoo.
It is the total solar eclipse, April 8th, 2024. This thing is going to happen here on Earth. And again, exciting thing. But this time around, it's extra special for a lot of us who live in the North American continent, because it's going to pass through, by what many people estimate, the largest population of humans ever to see a total solar eclipse in human history.
Wow.
I don't know if that's absolutely true, but that seems very possible given the fact that it runs through a whole lot of highly populated parts of the world. But we're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit. Let me explain. This cosmically cool event, the total solar eclipse, of course, has received a great deal of media attention. I don't know, Alan, how many references to it have you seen in the past week? At least 5, at least 10?
Yeah, like a bunch. I mean, honestly, I am subscribed to the NASA YouTube channel, so I do get all of their stuff. They had someone from NSYNC in there, actually, talking about the eclipse. I don't remember the details. You can look it up for yourself, but it was fun.
Well, that's very humorous. And of course, it is completely appropriate to get excited about it.
Definitely.
But there is a lot of information out there, and it's scattered. Right, you can get both very basic information and very complicated information. Well, this episode, we are hoping to bring to you in a nice, clean package, both a combination of the things that you might want to know when you're ready to go see the eclipse, whether or not you have had a lot of experience with eclipses, and a little bit more about the technical aspects, some of the scientific stuff, maybe some of the frontier information or special things that scientists are looking for about this particular total solar eclipse. So please sit back, relax, and enjoy. So, Alan, we should tell people about the thing that we're going to be clipping in today. Mm-hmm. With our episodes. Not just going to be the two of us talking here, but you actually took a recording of something yesterday.
Yep.
That we can talk about, right?
Yep. So I took a recording of a talk that you were doing about the eclipse as part of a larger astronomy event. And so that's going to be a little vertical phone video. So if you hear a little background noise, it's not too big a deal. That's just, it was people excited at the event, excited to hear about the eclipse.
Precisely. This event was at the College of Staten Island, my home institution, on March 19th, 2024. So looking forward to the eclipse itself and also the eve of the spring equinox.
Yeah.
So kind of a fun time. We had a lot of people there. In fact, about 3 times as many people as we expected, or at the maximum
we ran out of
fire
pizza.
Code would allow the space. ran out of pizza, ran out of eclipse glasses, ran out of a lot of things. But it was a lot of fun. Obviously, people are excited about it and they want to learn all about it. So the first thing that we addressed in that particular event was pretty much, what's the big deal? Like, this is just a shadow, right? It's an umbra and a penumbra. It's a shadow. It's the moon casting its shadow on the Earth.
Yep.
Didn't someone write a song about that at some point?
Yeah, maybe check out our social channels.
Oh, yeah, okay. Moon shadow. Just a philosophical thing, yeah. I mean, what would happen if the daytime went away for, 2.5 minutes? Anyway, yes. So what is the big deal? And it turns out there's actually more to it than just, oh, this happens all the time, because it doesn't. And it's, oh, it happens everywhere, because it doesn't. So here's what I was able to convey to the audience at the event. What's the big deal about a total solar eclipse?
Now, you might think, what's the big deal? Why are total solar eclipses so complicated? I mean, after all you have to do is just have the moon between the Earth and the sun, right? On your typical textbook or poster, it seems easy. Here's the Earth, here's the moon, here's the sun. But it's very, very complicated, as it turns out. So for example, if my head were the size of planet Earth, and believe me, there are people who in my family who think that I do think that my head is the size of planet Earth. But assuming that my head is the size of planet Earth, this head of this microphone is about the size of the moon. It's about a quarter the diameter. And it wouldn't be right here next to me. In fact, it would be clear across the room or the next table over there. So imagine me here, and then, 20 feet away, this little blob, and they've got a line right up with the moon. That's 400 times further away is the sun. So you have a huge complicated system and they're all spinning out in space. It seems almost miraculous that it even happens, ever, right? So it is a very rare thing.
So that was kind of cool, right, Alan? Once we were able to explain to people what the big deal is, then we started to talk a little bit about what the cool effects are. What we might see as things are happening going forward. And we'll talk about a few of them in detail in a moment, but let's hear the clip and you get a sense of like what it feels like.
This time, it's gonna be coming up from Mexico, near Baja California. It's gonna enter the mainland around Mazatlan, Mexico, the site of another total solar eclipse in July 1991. It's gonna come up through Mexico, in through Texas, up past Dallas, and then through the middle of the United States, through Indianapolis, through Cleveland, Buffalo, Rochester, past just south of Toronto, Canada, and then pump back into the United States near Burlington, Vermont, and then head out through the Canadian Maritimes into the Atlantic Ocean. And it's all going to do that at nearly 1,000 miles an hour. The shadow, if you've ever seen a total solar eclipse come at you, if you're standing on a mountain or something, you see it coming. It's like, Lord of the Rings. The orcs are coming, the horde, it's really amazing, all right? It's amazing to see the shadow of the Earth, the sun, the moon, whatever, that whole system coming at you at almost 1,000 miles an hour. College of Staten Island, and Staten Island in general, will have 91% coverage from the moon. That's great, right? When you look with your eclipse glasses, you'll see what looks like a very sharp crescent. It won't look like the normal crescent moon, which is just a half circle with a piece gouged out of it. It will actually look really, really, really crescenty, like a croissant that like somehow got attached in the front at the very end and then the baker cuts off the tips. You know what I'm talking about. But even at 91%, you still cannot look at the sun unaided. Please, if you are in Staten Island and the eclipse on April 8th, do not look at the sun unaided. Do not look at the sun without proper protection. Okay, this is extremely important. Even 9%, even 2% of the sun's light can permanently harm your eyes. So you have to not do that. Now, you'll still get a great experience and you'll enjoy it and you'll have fun seeing it, which is lovely. But it is said, and I think Trudy actually says this on her article as well, that 99% of the amazing stuff of a total solar eclipse happens in the last 1% of uncoverage. So you have to be between 99% and 100% covered in order to see all the amazing cool things like the Bailey's beads, the diamond ring effect, and things like that, and the corona in totality.
So, it's not exactly Mount Doom and Sauron and everything like that, but yes, it just comes over, boom, 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 boom.
And there is a ring involved with that diamond ring you were talking about.
Ooh, that's true. The ring. Is it one ring to rule them all, or just one ring and then another ring?
Well, it's one little valley on the moon, right? So you're talking about the Bailey's beads and the diamond ring.
Right. Yeah. Let's talk about that for just a moment. As you get to totality, you start seeing the sun's slivery light coming through valleys and mountains on the moon.
Yeah.
And if you're looking very carefully, you can, depending on exactly where the totality is happening across the limb of the moon, you will see little spots of light right along the edge. And those are called Bailey's beads, right? Beads of light. And then after that, the final bead, or sometimes this actually happens before, depending on, again, the topography of the moon as we're going forward, you get one spot left, which is like bright. Mm-hmm. And that one spot makes the, at that point, almost fully eclipsed sun look like a diamond ring.
Yeah.
And so we call that the diamond ring effect, right?
Yep. And also now, happens on the way out when the first peak of light peaks out through the first valley on the moon on the other side.
That's right. Right. So that's something for you all to look at carefully. Right at the last moment, Bailey's beads and the diamond ring effect, you will see just before true totality. And make sure that you are really, really taking care to protect your eyes during that time.
Yeah, okay. Right. Because you don't want to be temporarily blinded right during totality.
Right. It is better to be safe and not be looking and miss something on the way in than it is to like get yourself all spots in front of your eyes and not be able to enjoy the thing.
Yeah.
So wait. And if you don't catch Bailey's beads or the diamond ring effect on the way into totality, don't worry. You'll catch them on the way out for sure.
Yeah.
Right. Bottom line is that you've got to protect your eyes no matter what. There will be more total solar eclipses. There will not be too many more of your eyes.
Yeah, right.
Unless we have our cybernetic friends doing amazing things at neurobionics or whatever.
Yeah.
making cool stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. So we actually did in this event, right, Alan, talk about like how to prepare for the trip. Mm-hmm. How you should plan for the trip.
This is how. Don't go there on the day of the 8th. Do not attempt to say, well, you know, it's over in Rochester. It's only 5.5 hours drive. I'll leave here around 7 and I'll get there by around 12:30 and I'll see the eclipse and I'll go home and it'll be great. It is not going to happen. Because every single road heading into totality will be blocked by 10 times the traffic, maybe 12 times the traffic that you would ordinarily expect on that road. You will be stressed, you will be frustrated, you might even miss the whole thing. So what you should do instead is to look on the Path of Totality, which is published with exquisite accuracy on the internet anywhere. And what you should do is see if there is a relative or a friend that lives in the Path of Totality. And you give them a call, all right? Long before, like call them tomorrow, all right? It's like, hey, Cousin Alfred, how's it going? I know we haven't talked since 1994, but you know, how's it going? It's great to hear. Hey, listen, can I just bring an air mattress and like crash on your couch on the night of the 7th? Oh, you already have 45 other people coming. Well, is there room for 46? I can go on the porch. No, it's fine. I really don't mind. Yeah. Anyway, you find a way and you say, you know, bring Cousin Alfred a batch of cookies. Go over there the night before. By April 7th, make sure you are already sitting or living somewhere in the Path of Totality. Okay? Make sure you are there.
Yeah. So, you know, Alan, you probably remember that event. I mean, just talking about how we should plan an event, be careful about our eyes and everything.
Definitely.
And I don't want to diminish the fact that a partial solar eclipse is still cool.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, the vast majority, like I said, you know, 99% of the cool part of a total solar eclipse is right near totality.
Definitely,
the partials are still cool too. It's really neat to see.
And I mean, it's worth getting up in the morning. Yeah.
Yeah.
We did that a couple of times.
That's right. Just to take a look a little bit, I think it's worthwhile, right? And there is still cool stuff you can do with it.
There are still some cool things. Yeah. There was one that internet science dude named Matt Strassler was saying, which is that if you're in a partial eclipse zone, you can actually use your distance to the Path of Totality by measuring that distance and then measuring what fraction of the sun the moon has covered up. You can use that figure out the diameter of the moon using a little bit of geometry.
Ooh. Oh, that sounds like fun. Yeah, that's a cool exercise to do.
It is.
I think that that's a fun thing to try, and I think we should enjoy every kind of way to looking at eclipses, right?
Yeah, and totality is definitely the coolest stuff, but eclipses are so cool that they're, you know, 100 times cooler than almost anything else you can see in the sky. So that 1% is still amazing.
That's right. That's right. Everyone should remember that. And you shouldn't feel like you have to look just at the partial by itself, by up in the sky, right? When you have the eyeglasses on, the solar filters really block out all the rest of the light anywhere. So you can expect that to definitely be clear. But if there happen to be clouds where you are, you can actually see it getting brighter and darker depending on how the clouds are floating through in front also. So there's some cool visual effects. And there are people who can use like digital cameras and so forth without directly looking at the sun in its partiality to take some cool pictures. Sometimes I've seen over the years, I don't know if you think too, Alan, that some of the partial photos are even more visually striking than the total photos.
I saw Smarter Every Day on YouTube. I think it was Smarter Every Day, one of the other science YouTube channels. They took a photo of the partial eclipse right while the ISS was passing in front of the sun. They managed to like position themselves on Earth in the exact correct spot so they could get those two at the same time.
They counted out and knew, because, you know, so the ISS would zip across the surface.
Yeah,
the
so they just got a really high speed shutter going on. So it was, they got like a few frames, and a few of them had the ISS.
They had to time it within fractions of a second, too.
Yeah, I think they just started the high speed like a second or two before and then ended it a second or two after.
Amazing.
But yeah, it was
really, really impressive.
Yes.
Oh, we'll have to check that one out at some point. And that was just the 2017 one.
Yeah, I believe it was either the 2017 or the 2023 annular one. But yeah, I think it was the 2017 eclipse.
Very, very impressive. Okay, so one important question that people get all the time about what to do, how to enjoy, what you should see about the total solar eclipse. Like, what should most of us, including me, like I'm a professional astronomer, right? I do research in colliding galaxies and all that sort of stuff. But when I go and enjoy an eclipse, what do I do, right? Alan, you know the answer because you're with me. But the general public sometimes feels like, oh, I've got to do all the technical stuff. I got to get all the heaviest cameras, all this. But maybe not. Yeah. Anyway, take a listen to what we talk about with the audience on this particular topic.
Once you are in the path of totality, you have your eclipse glasses, you hang out, and you know what I recommend? Don't do anything technical. Enjoy the event. Watch all around. See how the birds stop chirping. See how the sun looks like a dark blotch in the middle of nothing with this eerie glow around the outside. See how light is still filtering out around the horizon all around you. See how the shadows of the leaves in the trees have these weird crescent shapes. You've never noticed that before. Have fun with it. Take some pictures. Snap some. Take a selfie. My favorite picture from the totality in the eclipse of 2017 was with my family with me, with the eclipse in the background. My daughter, who actually is good at taking selfies, unlike me, like, okay, moving on. And she like just sat there. We planned it ahead of time. I said, okay, during totality, can we have a selfie? We just all turned around and took the picture. You know, the sun looks terrible. I mean, this is not like anything worth publishing, but it was my favorite picture because it had all silhouettes of the five of us in the front. It was just like the experience, the memory of the time. Have fun with it. Don't worry about the technical stuff. There are many, many people around the world with tremendous technical skills and expertise. They will be set up. They will take those perfect pictures. They will take those things that you will be able to see on television or on the internet. You just enjoy, snap some shots, have fun with it. Do as much as you want that would be fun for you. Do not stress it. And have fun, and that's all it is. And just enjoy those 2.5 minutes. And then go home. You might sit in traffic on the way home. Be ready.
So, you know, go hang out with your Uncle Alfred for, you know, or whoever you want.
Right,
and just enjoy those few moments relaxing and taking it easy. Have fun with it. That's what we did, right? I mean, we had a few cameras and everything, but the story of us taking the selfie is still, you know, one of my favorite events.
That's nice.
When we did the eclipse thing. So I think we should totally encourage all of our audience members to enjoy the total solar eclipse that way, if they possibly can.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, after this presentation of this information for everybody, we took a bunch of questions, because that's what we do on this show, right? That's what we do in general. I love answering questions because people have questions. In fact, I have often said that the questions we have to answer are the ones we have yet to ask. So we should all totally ask questions.
Definitely.
Now, one particularly interesting question from the audience in this case that we had some recording of, right, was regarding a possible object that we ordinarily would not see during a total solar eclipse. I thought that was really cool. So let's take a listen about that, and we'll catch up on some information after the clip.
Hang on. Yes, what is your question?
Do you think you guys see the comet when totality goes?
What a great question. One second, okay? You'll come next. There will be a comet in the direction of the sun when totality is happening. Right now, it's kind of going in that direction. We can't see it because of the glare of the sun, right? Will we be able to see it? I don't know. I'm going to be looking. That will be cool to see, wouldn't it? That would be a truly remarkable thing to see, a comet in the sky in the eclipse. Would that be cool to watch?
Yeah. So a comet in the sky during an eclipse.
Yeah.
That is super cool.
Definitely. Yeah. So this particular comet is Comet 12P Pons-Brooks. We think it was the 12th periodic comet to be numbered. So that means the ones like Halley's Comet was number one, because it was the first one that we knew came back every so often. Halley's Comet's every 76 years. Pons-Brooks is a little bit more often. It's once every 71 years. And so we expect this time around it'll get to around 4.2 magnitude, maybe, which is visible in a truly dark sky for sure. During the eclipse, it might be visible. It might not be visible. We have to see. One thing this comet is known for is having like outbursts of gas and dust that make it extra bright.
Oh.
So if one of those happens right before the eclipse, then maybe you'll get to see it. If not, don't worry too much. You can, if you have a telescope, you can bring it out and see it in the actual nighttime later on, or just catch someone else's really great pictures of it. There's already some that people have posted.
Yeah, I suspect that there will be some real serious astrophotographers going for the comet during totality, and more power to them. I hope they get something cool. I would love to see
that. I would love to see what they have. Yeah, even if we can't see it with our eyes, someone's going to get a good picture.
Right. I myself am not too concerned about seeing it in particular. Like I said, in the clips there, in the live event yesterday, just enjoy it with the people you want to enjoy it with.
Definitely.
Right. In the way in which would give you most joy. It's just too much fun. You know, it's 2 minutes. Just enjoy it. Go, wow, cool, relax, take it easy. You know, toast the sun or something like that. I think it's just a lot of fun. Now, one question we did not get on the video of the event, Alan, was one that I thought was really advanced and excellent. And I know that you've already done some work on this. So I'd like you to tell people about this particular answer to this particular question. Okay. The question was generally about how we were so able as scientists to be able to plot the path of the solar eclipse to such precision and such accuracy. Right. And that's really true. We have worked very hard for a very long time to be able to simulate all the motions. And we pretty much are able to get just about every single view of every single object in the solar system from every other solar system object. Due to the quality of our ability to calculate and compute these things using our supercomputers. But you have actually gone even further than that, right? The specific questions were like, where are total solar eclipses actually visible in the solar system? And you actually have an answer to this.
Yeah. So there's two things there. So one is how we know the prediction of eclipses so far into the past and the future. And you know, people have been doing that since the ancient Babylonians. We have cuneiform tablets written out saying, you know, here's how we know when the next eclipses are happening based on the cycles of the Earth, Moon, and the Sun. Especially lunar eclipses are sort of the key to decoding the solar eclipses. The lunar eclipses are, you know, those blood moons when the Earth is between the Sun and the Moon. And it turns out that lunar eclipses and solar eclipses are related closely enough you can use one to help predict the other.
It's amazing. It's really fun. And the Babylonians knew how to do this thousands of years ago.
They did. They, you know, stared with their at the moon with their little measuring devices, and sometimes pretty large measuring devices, and they figured it all out. So with the modern equipment, this is a thing that I was a question that I was answering about where else you can see eclipses in the solar system. It's often stated that there's no other planet where you can see a perfect eclipse, right? Because either their moons are too large so that it just totally blocks out the sun and its outer layers, or it's so small that it doesn't fully block out the sun, like Mars's moons, Phobos and Deimos do. But it turns out that that's true to an extent, right? So there's no planet for which one of its large round moons perfectly blocks out the sun in this as nice a ratio as Earth's moon does to Earth. But there are some of the small irregularly shaped moons are sort of the right size for Saturn and Uranus, I believe. Which might make a little bit of a lumpy shape if they're not exactly at the correct angle. But the other thing...
Bailey's broken diamond ring.
Yeah, right, exactly. But the other thing about it is that if you're standing on one moon of Jupiter or Saturn, then it's possible that another moon is in exactly the right position to block things pretty well. Yeah, so I think like if you're standing on like Jupiter's moon Io and you want to see Callisto blocking out the sun, those are two of the four Galilean moons that Galileo discovered around Jupiter. You can stand on one, and if everything's just lined up correctly, which only happens a couple times in every decade or two, but if everything's just lined up correctly, you can see an eclipse. But the issue is that it would only last for like 3 seconds because their moons are moving faster and the sun is farther away from them. So it just appears smaller in the sky. But you could hypothetically get one. And we can predict that from Earth because we've been measuring when one moon casts a shadow on another as a way to like refine models of their orbit. And so that has really helped us get the orbits of these objects down so we can tell within seconds or minutes exactly when these mutual events, they're called, happen.
Remarkable. So we're really in the 21st century doing the same kinds of calculations that the Babylonians did thousands of years ago, just with better equipment and with greater detail calculational power. After all this time, we're still doing the same things. We're just doing them with more and more refinement. That's awesome.
It's
and
really 3 seconds.
Yeah, and 3 seconds really isn't that short of a time. I mean, if this YouTuber that you mentioned earlier could actually get the International Space Station moving across the sun's face in the fraction of a second, I'm sure that it would be fun to be able to get over there at some point, maybe send some sort of a mini probe or something over there, or just sit there and watch and get that moment of the 3 seconds. I think that would
be... Well, if you're sending space probes, that what you can also do is go behind the Earth at exactly the right distance for it to block out the sun.
Right.
Yeah, there'll be somewhere... I think I did a calculation. It's somewhere between the distance of the moon and the distance of, like, the JWST over at L2. There's some exact point where hypothetically you could just see the Earth block out the sun just by going there whenever you want.
Wow. Well, that makes a lot of sense. So another question which I found interesting, which I'm happy to answer, but you know, Alan, you should, if you have something to add to the answer, by all means, let me know, was actually to ask me, this is I think it was a child, but still a meaningful and valuable question. How do prominences and flares get produced on the sun? As you know, when we see the totality, there will be, in fact, these streamers of light that come off at the sides, right? Most of these streamers are very large, even longer than the sun. That's part of the corona.
Yeah, the outermost atmosphere of the sun.
Right. Yeah, it's really bright. And when the eclipse is happening, it's actually really bright. It could be super beautiful. But right near the edge of the totality disk there are sometimes these reddish, typically, or bluish sometimes, little prominences and solar flares and loops that you can see, right? And where the heck did those come from? And why are they there? And that's a really great question. And the way I answered this question was essentially to explain that the sun acts a lot like a pot of boiling water. The sun, if you can imagine it, is essentially this super hot fluid, right?
Yeah.
A pot of boiling water, because of Earth's gravity, that toward the center of the Earth, which is down toward the floor on our human level, is there's a hot source of energy, the heat. And so when it bubbles upward, the heat travels through the water in the pot. You wind up heating it up so much that you have these bubbles that are coming up and streamers. And when it's in a rolling boil, you have all this turbulence and this pop, 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 pop.
Yeah.
Roiling water on top, right? Because it's hot on the inside.
And then you put some spaghetti in it and it bubbles over.
There you go. Well, that's starch stuff, but we'll talk about that some other time when we're doing exobiology. That's a very, those gluten bundles, right? Those starch bundles. We gotta take a look at those. Those are fun. But what happens in this case, right, is that the sun is like that pot of boiling water, but the source of the heat of the sun is not sort of further down toward the center, but is actually the center itself.
Yeah.
It's 30 million degrees Fahrenheit worth of nuclear fusion powered heat.
Oh. Right?
That heat pushes outward from the center of the sun and it percolates through the sun from the middle. That energy helps to provide the pressure that keeps the sun from collapsing on itself. So it's kind of puffs it outward. So by the time it gets to the edge, this 35 million degree gas, at plasma energy, whatever, has moderated substantially so that the surface is only about 11,000 degrees Fahrenheit.
Only,
I mean, hotter than any blast furnace that we use.
It reminds me of when we were talking with Christina Migliori with the edge of the fusion reactor versus the center.
That's right. Yeah, and she was saying, oh, it's much cooler around the edge.
only several thousand. And you're like, man. Yeah, the fun part with the sun is that in addition to all that heat, there's also a lot of magnetic energy going around. It's the magnetic fields that contribute to the shapes and the spewing out of those prominences and flares. So it's like...
That's exactly right.
It adds an extra element of that that they call magnetohydrodynamics, which...
MHD. They used to call it magic hydrodynamics, but now we do much better. Because we have our supercomputers that can do a much better job of computing what actually happens.
Yes.
So if it were just heat, then you would get the bubbling, and we see those, right? The granules and the spicules on the surface of the sun. It's just blobs and blobs and blobs, convection cells and things like that. But because of those magnetic fields being twisted and torn and so forth, you get concentrations of intense energy combined with the magnetic fields. And when those magnetic fields are twisted or torn or bent, or they shoot off. And those are the things that lead to the prominences and the flares and the coronal loops and things like that. So it's that combination of the superheat and those magnetic fields roiling around in this huge cosmic pot of solar plasma.
Yeah. One thing I want to add about the corona specifically is that we have sent a space probe into the corona, which is like the coolest thing that has happened in the past like couple years of sun physics.
Wow.
Is the Parker Solar Probe is the thing that has gone closest to the sun that humans have created. It has gone literally into that outer layer that you can see the part of during the eclipse.
Wow. And it is... millions of degrees out there.
Yeah, right? Thankfully it's so rarefied, so close to being a vacuum, that it can survive with just a few heat shield tiles. Good. But it's crazy. It took some crazy engineering, and it's happened.
I am so impressed. Yeah, and the fact that by the time the energy from the center of the sun reaches the edge, it's only 11,000 Fahrenheit or so. But by the time it gets to the corona, it is reheated up to millions.
Is it really millions in the corona?
Oh, it can get up there, yes. And so probably the average is hundreds of thousands, I guess.
Dang, but, more than a million Kelvin. That's what it says right here.
Wow. Yeah, and a million Kelvin's, 2 million Fahrenheit.
Yeah, roughly. Right, there you go. Right?
So that's really, really hot. So that reheating mechanism is still a mystery that solar scientists still need to solve.
And definitely.
Maybe someday we'll get Jimmy Negus back. Who is now doing work on the sun, and we'll see what kind of new stuff he can tell us.
Yeah, and this eclipse might have an extra special corona because we're so close to solar maximum, the most active time of the sun's 11-year cycle.
That's exactly right. I had not even I should have mentioned that last night, Alan. That's a great point. Solar max, we are ready.
Yeah.
We got sunspots already. Just a couple of weeks ago, you pointed out a sunspot to me that was so large that we didn't need a telescope or anything.
Yeah, we
to
just
see
used
it.
The eclipse
we
glasses.
Just put on the eclipse glasses before the eclipse actually happened and looked at the sun, and there was a little spot.
Yeah.
Right around 3 o'clock.
Crazy.
I was amazing. Yeah. And that spot was many times the diameter of our planet Earth.
Yeah.
It's really quite amazing. So I'm psyched. This is going to be a really fun eclipse. I am so glad that we are living in a time and in a place that gives us the opportunity to enjoy this so much.
Yeah.
And I'm really glad that I get to enjoy it with you, Alan.
Oh,
and
thanks.
We get to go and have fun, hang out with our friends and our families, and just go and have a great time this time.
It'll be good.
Yeah. Alan, thank you so much. We had such a great time talking about the sun and eclipses, and thanks for taking the video for yesterday's event for the public. That was fun.
Yeah, definitely. Really glad to do it and glad I got that video.
And all of you out there, please enjoy the eclipse. I hope this episode of The Lunaverse is helping you to plan and think about and enjoy what's coming up. Without too much detail, we want to let you know that you should go out into the entire internet to find all kinds of great stuff about the solar eclipse. All right. So NASA.gov has got eclipse stuff. The American Astronomical Society, AAS.org, has also lots of eclipse information about how to do it, what to do. And so,
You know, check that out.
Ain't no sunshine. Where'd it go? And all of you out there, thank you so much for being with us today. If you like what you see or hear, please follow us on Patreon and support us. And as always, thank you for being a part of the Lunaverse.